God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. Our group is welcome. None of that fits. Silence your cell phones. No. Is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety? This is not to embarrass you. It's to welcome you. It's to bring you into the fold. Just wave at the screen or say something, whatever. I don't know if I'll see it, but do it anyway.
Hey, my name's Austin, and today is day 29.
Right on, Austin. Congratulations. Thanks for being here. Anybody else? Okay. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on... Am I screaming? Could somebody say if I am? I must not be. Okay. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one, part one, the physical allergy. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Dave G. and Karen, formerly of Simple Actions. Welcome. I'm going to go ahead and read the first paragraph on page XXVI. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Page XXVI. The physician who at our request gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us, but we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. And Dave G is going first. Do I have to unmute him?
Is that it?
Oh, you're on.
All right, cool. Hey, y'all, I'm Dave Graziano, alcoholic. Thank y'all for having me. Dave, thanks for asking me to come down here. I really appreciate it. I've been down here one time before. It's y'all, a great group of people. Sick as you are, you're still a great group of people, man. I love you. You know, and that's the thing that I've kind of got like a sarcastic wise guy kind of attitude, you know, and it's, when I read the book, sometimes it comes out like that, you know, and it's talking about, you know, maladjusted to life, full flight from reality, you know, and it says, and then it says that, you know, this might be true in some of us, you know, to a great extent, you know, I think that's like a little, I think that's funny because I can identify with that, you know, and also in there when it talks about, you know, alcoholic torture. I mean, that's a big deal for a guy like me, because when I was, before I got sober, you know, and it was torture, you know, and it's one of those things that I want to, when I'm right in the minute, you know, and these guys are taking me through the book. And just as a disclaimer, I was in AA for 3.5 years before my sobriety date, which is July 28, 2012. But I was in AA drunk for 3.5 years, but I was only going to like 5 or 6 meetings a week, you know, and I had a sponsor and I had a home group. I had a job in the home group. I was a drunk coffee guy. I was the only guy in my home group that they wouldn't give the coffee money to up front because they was afraid I was going to drink it, which I would have, you know, they're not stupid. But so when I look at these kind of things, I have to look at it after I got sober, right? You know, and a lot of it makes sense now because I see how great my life has become. And I can look back on this kind of information and be like, oh, it makes total sense. You know, but when I'm first getting sober, it's confusing, which is why somebody else has to read it to me and explain it to me, you know? And I like when they talk about Dr. Silkworth, you know, he put his neck on the line for us, right? Because here's a guy who regarded a guy like Bill Wilson as hopeless, you know, and it says it in the doctor's opinion that he, if you're going to be honest with yourself as a doctor in recovery, you have to admit that you really don't know what you're doing. There's nothing you can do with some people. And he went ahead and did all this stuff for us. But anyway, the allergy part of it too was big for me because I remember specifically, which is weird because I was a blackout drinker. I remember sitting in the bar one time talking to the dude and I was like, there's something in the second beer, right? Because I was like, my wife was like, when you get off work, come home. I worked in a bar, right? A restaurant. Just come home. And she let me drink all I wanted at the house, right? And I would sit at the bar and I was like, my buddy's at the bar. Come on, have a beer, you know? And I'd be like, if I can just drink this one and leave, which absolutely never happened, to be honest with you. Never, never. And I was sitting there and there was just something about that second beer. And that stuck in my head. And then I got to AA and I said, dude, you got an allergy. Your body is different than the rest of the bodies out there. And one thing about the two men, that the body being different, I know alcoholics that drink way more than any doctor ever said that they could. You know, we all know those guys that blow the 3.5 and the 3.7 and stuff like that and walking around. I got a brother of mine, he's 54 years old. He drinks about 0.5 gallon of vodka a day, you know, and he's just starting to see the signs of the alcoholic deterioration of the body. I was lucky, man. My body was shutting down at 43, but it's a alcoholic torture. Woo. Right nail right on the head for me. All right, I'm going to turn it over to my pal, Karen. Thank you.
I'm Karen. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 14 February 2018. I have a sponsor who knows that she sponsors me, and I also take other females through the book of Alcoholics Anonymous through the steps as I was taken by my sponsor. There's so much good stuff in these two paragraphs, and it's so funny because when I took step one the first time around, it's all a blur. So when I started sponsoring, I called my sponsor. I'm like, hey, did we read this? She's like, yes, Karen, we read it. I'm like, are you sure? Like, because I don't remember. Like, I see highlighted stuff, but I don't remember reading this. And like, it was such a blur because I was in that self-reliant alcoholic fog probably the first year I was sober. So my memory is a little patchy, to say the least. But the way it says, it did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, which is me. I need life to not be on life's terms. I need it on Karen's terms because I am the center of the universe. And I didn't know I wasn't until I came in the rooms and y'all broke the news to me. We were in full flight from reality, which, I mean, my motto when drinking was, hey, let's go drink till we can't feel feelings anymore. My whole life was escaping my reality. And it was always to change the things outside of me and never changing anything within myself. It was, I need to leave this relationship. I need to leave this location. I need to leave this command. I need to leave, you know, this, that, and the thing. I mean, I lived from the States to the Middle East to Europe. And guess what? I was an alcoholic in America. I was an alcoholic in the Middle East, and I was an alcoholic in Europe. Fun stuff. Seems like wherever I go, things just don't work out. I just don't understand it. Because I'm always in flight from my reality, or outright mental defects. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us, which I'm one of those considerable extents. I love in the second paragraph where it says, as laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. And that to me is so powerful because, you know, I'm not the smartest person in the universe. I can't explain to you the whole chemical reaction with the brain and the body of when alcohol is put in my system, what chemicals react and don't react and what neurons shoot off and which ones don't. I'm not that smart. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a therapist, a counselor, none of that, but I am an ex-problem drinker, and I can tell you how I drank, and I can tell you what I did to have a connection with something greater than myself that gave me a solution to my problem. That's what I can do as an ex-problem. And that's where the core of the beauty of this program lies, because my sponsor, you know, I had doctors, therapists, psychologists tell me, you have a drinking problem. I was like, I went to military rehab, SARP, and they told us, you know, all the medical reasons why when we drink, this is why it happens. And, you know, here's how you can kind of like, and I was like, and me being analytical, I'm like, all right, so if I can figure this math equation out, I can fix this problem. none of these doctors, none of these people with degrees could tell me nothing or tell me about my drinking, but an ex-problem drinker sat me down and took me through this book. And that was what was like the sound good sense. That's what got to me, was an ex-problem drinker, not a doctor, not a psychiatrist. It was one of y'all. And that's the beauty, is that every single person in this room today has that purpose and has that specialty, is we're all able to help somebody because we're ex-problem drinkers in a way that no one else can. And that's all I have to share on those two paragraphs. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank y'all. That was great. The second reading is page XXVIII. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Dave?
Some of y'all that were on at the beginning heard my academic career, right? So when Dave sent me this information, I considered that homework, so I didn't do it. So I'm trying to find it in the book. But anyway, the thing is about that what they're talking about there is, right, is they're convincing me that I can't drink. I just can't. I can't drink safely. And I never was able to drink safely, right? But the other side of that problem is that I'm an alcoholic and I'm powerless over alcohol. So I haven't been deciding to drink for a long time, even though I thought I was, you know, because I don't think that I ever had a social drink in my life that I can remember. You know, I was never like, hey, let's go out to dinner and have a couple glasses. That's not me, you know. I mean, I came to get down, you know, and that's just the way that I drank, you know. And one thing about that too, man, is that my problems pile up on me, right? And the way that they can prove to me, that's one thing that I had a problem with, was the powerlessness of the alcohol, right? And the guy told me, he said, you got all of these problems that are related to drinking, right? If you weren't powerless over alcohol, you would just stop drinking and the problems would go away, right? But he told me, he said, you know what your problem is? I said, what's that? He said, you drink too much. He said, you know what your solution to that is? I said, no, you tell me. He said, more drinking, right? Things get bad because of alcohol, and I drink more of what's causing the problem, you know? And it's one of those things too, because it doesn't happen. Like, to be like a stone cold alcoholic, it's a pretty small minority of people that drink, right? Like, I know a lot of people who, not a lot, but I'll tell you like this, everybody in my life who's not in AA drinks, and they drink a lot, you know? I didn't come here out of the Boy Scouts, right? And I know a lot of dudes who drink a lot, and a lot of times when you see them, they are drunk, right? There's a couple of buddies I'm on. We go to this restaurant recovery meeting anyway. I'd already told the story today one time, but I went to my buddy's party the other night, Saturday night, my wife and I, and the party started at 4, right? And we got there at 10, right? I mean, they was getting down. I mean, it was ugly. It was funny, but I mean, I've known these guys my whole life, so it wasn't like a shock, right? But those guys will drink like that on Saturday. And then on Sunday, they probably won't drink nothing at all, you know? And that's crazy to me. I mean, getting drunk Saturday night, that I guess that makes sense. But not getting drunk on Sunday, that's what I don't get, you know? And that's the difference between an alcoholic and a heavy drinker, you know? And the book talks about it, that it can look the same. And like my wife, she drinks, but she doesn't drink. We say drinking here, she doesn't drink like we drink. But we were in, she had a glass of wine one night, and I asked her if she wanted another one. And she was like, no, I'm fine, right? Which normally she does. And I said, but baby, you could drink the whole bottle, right? You're not an alcoholic. Nobody's going to say anything to you, right? She's like, but I don't want to drink the whole bottle because I'm not an alcoholic, right? And he just kind of like, okay, you know, I guess that makes sense on some level, you know, but that the allergy, because the one thing about an allergy, man, is an allergy is an abnormal reaction. So everybody's telling me that alcohol is a depressant. And I'm sure that scientifically that it is, but my body reacts differently. I drink 2-3 beers, 4 beers. I'm not taking the edge off. Man, I'm priming the pump. When I drink, I get fired up, man. Let's go. You know, I was never the kind of drinker like, I'm so stressed. If I could just have a Chardonnay, everything would be fine. You know, I was like, dude, I can't even get down. Let's go. Let's get after it. You know, and I'm thinking that's my idea the whole time. You know, it'd be a great idea, you know. Because I'm the kind of alcoholic, like my wife said to me one time, she said, if you ever come home drunk again, that's it. It's over. You're out. Baby, I swear. Because you feel bad anyway. Because I mean, I don't know about you, but I did a lot of horrific things, said a lot of horrific things when I was drinking. I was a verbally and physically abusive father to my 2 little girls. I never put my hands on my wife, but she thought that I was gonna. I found that out in my mind. I did a lot of bad stuff to a lot of good people. Now, like my buddy says, I did a lot of bad stuff to a lot of bad people, but that's a whole different deal. And she said to me, she said, if you ever drink again, that's it. It's over. Baby, I swear to God, I will never, never. I come home as a Wednesday. My home group is on Wednesday night. I come home that Wednesday night from my home group in a blackout, right? So I got some kind of choice in it. My wife and 2 kids, the only thing that really means anything to me in my life. And I'm willing to give that away. Because I decided to have a couple beers. Not this skinny guinea, man. Once I get going, man, it's over at all. So they got to convince me of that. And then what do I do, right? To your point, Karen. Somebody who's been down the path's got to take me through and show me what's got to be done, you know? Because people said, oh, man, your life's so easy. I said, dude, you don't know how much work it takes to make it look this easy. I mean, this is an effort right here. I don't just get to wake up and walk around like, hey, man, the world is great, man. There's a lot of prayer, a lot of meditation, a lot of talking to fools, you know? You don't understand that the old AA war cry. Remember that one? Oh, you don't understand. You don't understand. These guys, one time I said that to this dude, and he said, he goes, oh, yeah. He's kind of laughing. He's like, yeah, you're right. I said, go over and tell him. And I walk over to the other guy in the meeting. I tell him what's going on. He said, what you got to do is, what we doing here, let's do, you don't understand. They walk me around the whole room. I had like 20 dudes laughing in my face that night because they don't understand, right? Because y'all do understand. You do get it. So next time I'll do my homework, Dave, I'm sorry. That's all I got. Thank you.
Karen's still an alcoholic. So manifestation of an allergy. I do remember this part. When I first came in the rooms, I hated it when y'all called it an allergy. I was like, that makes no sense. Doesn't make sense. Cause if it was an allergy, which means your body has a physical like reaction to it, a negative reaction to it, why would I keep drinking? That's stupid. It's because I'm an alcoholic. That's why. My body does have an allergic reaction to alcohol. You know, you break out in hangovers and a couple of blackouts, some bad decision making, and some spiritual bankruptcy and anxiety and depression. And you would think, probably stop. Nope. Have all these symptoms. Nope. Just going to keep going back to it. Keep going back to that bottle, baby, because as long as I'm in the bottle, I can keep pushing off reality just long enough. And then when I get back in reality, I just have to sit in my problems until I'm uncomfortable. And then I get right back in the bottle and push reality off a little bit more. And that's the allergy, the obsession of, I just got to keep going back because I have to keep this cycle going. Even though I'm having all these physical, emotional, and mental and spiritual consequences of it all. But when I first came in the room, I was like, that's it. And now today I'm just like, yep, an allergy. Yep. It sucks. And, you know, there's no EpiPen for that. And then it talks about the phenomenal craving. It is limited to this class and never occurs in the temperate drinker. And, that was me to the T. Once I start, I can't stop. And, the one thing that really got me, because I could stop for small periods of time, you know, I was a huge inconvenience to deal with. I really feel sorry for all my junior sailors that had to deal with me during that time, because I was a handful. And I can remember someone one time said, if I'm controlling my drinking, I'm not enjoying myself. But if I enjoy my drinking, I'm not controlling it. I'm not in control of it at all. And that phrase, for some reason, has stuck with me through my entire sobriety, where I'm just like, that's me. Like, when I'm sitting there trying to count my drinks, because I'm like, all right, I can't look like I'm too eager to drink. So I have to have this one little mixed drink. But then if they tell me we're doing shots, I can set the mixed drink down, go to the shots, go back to the drink. So I've technically only had one drink, because the shots don't really count, you know, towards the drink count. You know, there's a shot count and a drink count with separate counts. So then you got to wait. And then I'm looking at everyone else's drink like, okay, am I on tempo with everyone else? Okay, no, yes, no, yes, no, okay. And of course, like, I'm taking shots with all the guys because mama didn't raise no quitter. So, you know, by the end of the night, we're up into the double digits with the shots, and then we're into the double digits with the drinks. And then those double digits, you know, we don't mix the double, we don't put them together. We don't add them. They're separate little categories. But I would be so miserable all night because all that mental calculation in my head, just trying to make sure, okay, I have to stay on tempo with everyone else. And I have to make sure I'm not doing too much of this. And if I drink this, then I'll drink a bottle of water, and then I can go back to the shots, and then I'll drink a bottle of water, and then I'll go back to my drink. And then that way it'll even out. And I'm not enjoying the night because the whole night I'm so focused on my drinking. I couldn't tell you who I talked to, what conversations were had, who was laughing, what the jokes were. I couldn't tell you. I didn't know because I was too busy looking at everyone's drinks. But then if I go and enjoy myself, still can't tell you who I talked to, what the conversation was, what the jokes were, why people were laughing, or what I did that night, because I was so focused on my drinks. Either way, Karen's out in the moment. Karen's in a bottle drinking. The only difference is if I'm not controlling my drinking, I'm definitely having a much better time because I'm not doing the math in my head. I'm just going. I'm just going with the flow of the universe. And it says, formed a habit and found we could not break it. Their reliance upon human, they've lost their self-confidence. Their reliance upon human things or problems pile up on them and become astoundingly difficult to solve. So, like Dave said, you know, it's like, I made my life look really good on the outside. Like, I was promoting really fast. I was in a good position. I was fully qualified. I was ahead of the game. I was doing super, super well. Like, I had, you know, on the outside, I had my stuff together on the outside, and nobody really knew what was going on unless they were super, super close into it, like close to me, which was only like maybe. But internally, you know, I was dying. I was emotionally bankrupt. All my problems seemed like huge astronomical issues that I just could not deal with. And I felt myself trying to piece together my life and frantically trying to put together solutions to my problems. And the only solution I could come up with was to drink until I couldn't feel my feelings anymore, and to drink until I forgot what the problem was, and then just deal with it when I wake up. And the habit of doing that and not being able to break it, I can remember being on the floor crying and being like, why are you going out and drinking, Karen? Why are you doing this? Like, why can't you just stop? You know that this road leads to this problem, and you know that this is going to happen. So why are you drinking? And I went out and drank that night because I have a physical, mental, spiritual twist going on. It's the mental obsession and then the physical dependence that leads me to that drink. And I have no solution and no defense for it outside of, I guess I'll go drink, like, because that's the only thing I know at that point before I came into the rooms. And thankfully I got here and y'all showed me the solution to my problem. And we'll get into that more later, but that's all I got for now.
Thank you both. That was great. We're going to continue on page XXVIII. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over. And unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. On the other hand, and strange as it may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. Dave?
Thank you, Amy. Yeah, and that's when they say in there, doomed, right? And it talks about it too, man, in the book about, like, these guys are sitting me down there and they're reading the doctor's opinion. You know, so basically, you can admit you're an alcoholic. Dude, I got it. If you can admit that, so then you got two choices. You can either live a life based on spiritual principles or be doomed to an alcoholic death. Do you understand that? I'm like, yes, I do. Well, what do you want to do? Let me think about it, right? You know? And it talks about in the book, further on in the book, it says it's not an easy decision to make, right? And then they talk in there that says you have to have an entire psychic change, right? Not partial. I have to be changed completely, you know? And the thing is, I was talking to my buddy the other day, man, a lot of stuff that they're asking me to do in this program, they know that I can't do it. So that's why they hooked me up with God through the steps, you know, and the relationship gets developed, right? Because that morning when I stopped drinking, right, I wasn't like, you know what, I'm not drinking anymore. That ain't what happened for me. What I said was, because they kept saying, just when you wake up in the morning, just say, God, please keep me sober for today. And then at the end of the night, say, thank you for keeping me sober. Just simple like that. Well, I wouldn't do it, right? Because I got content prior to investigation, right? And so what I said was, I said, you know, God, please keep me sober for the next 45 minutes, because that's as long as I could go, right? Having no concept, you know. And then I thanked him after that 45 minutes, you know, and right from that jump, right then and right there, the desire to drink alcohol was removed from me. And I was drinking, at that point, I was drinking 2 or 3 pints a day, and it was just gone. And it's been gone, right? Why has it been gone? Because I'm willing to do a few simple things, right? That seemed like the most complicated thing in the world before I started doing them, right? You want me to sit quiet for 5 minutes when I wake up in the morning? Have you lost your mind? 5 minutes? Just sitting there quiet for 5 minutes? Come on, man. That don't sound simple to me, right? Well, nothing's simple until you start doing it. You know, got to be willing to do it. I have to be willing to follow, you know, and that's another thing. My sponsor is a great guy, man, but he's a lot cooler since I stopped drinking. But he said, I didn't want to do it, right? And he said, why don't you want to do it? I said, dude, I'm trying to figure it out, right? But he's that kind of sponsor that listens when you talk to him. It's annoying, but it's a good thing to have. And he said, let me tell you something, buddy. He said, you barely graduated high school. He said, you ain't figured out nothing your whole life. Now, the one thing that's going to save your life, that's the thing you decide to figure out. He said, man, that's some bad timing, brother. You know what I mean? And the thing of what they're talking about in here is they're not asking me to figure it out. They already figured it out. They already know how to do it just to do it, right? I got to get to that point. But a guy like me, I'm not going to get to that point till I get to that point. I'm not going to be willing to do it until I'm willing to do it. You know? Isn't that always funny when the phone rings? The house line? My kids are like, Dad, what is that? I said, oh, go answer it. Remember when you'd be sitting there and mom would say, go answer the phone? I'm sorry, but I don't know how to turn it off. But anyway, you know, and it's one of those things that I won't hear it until I'm ready to hear it, right? I won't do it until I'm ready to do it. And I have to do it, you know? And we've all have people in our lives, man, that we just want to go up to them and be, you know, like the carpenter and just put your hands on them. And I said, dude, you got it now. You got what I got. Let's go. But it doesn't work like that. It just doesn't, you know? And it's a lot of pressure off for a guy like me, because I know for a fact that when I work with other dudes and help them, try to help them through the book, you know, that nothing I say to them is going to get them sober. Nothing I say to them is going to get them drunk. I know that. And that, you know how I know that, right? Because if I knew what to say to get somebody sober, I would have said it to myself, right? Because that's my level of selfishness. I got myself sober. I never met you people, but I'm like, see ya. You know what I mean? It's an inside job. I got to get there myself. But the way I get there is coming in these and listening and talking to people and being something that I never was before I got here, which is honest, you know, honesty, willingness, and an open mind. Save this old boy's tail for sure. And I didn't have none of it when I got here, not one scratch of it. My sponsor was like, "How you doing?" I'm like, "Man, I'm doing good." He's like, "Are you lying to me?" I was like, "Why do you think I'm lying?" He said, "Your lips are moving." You know what I mean? That was the kind of dude I was. Now, and when it comes to just on a sidebar. When it comes to rigorous honesty, right, I am always 100% honest, unless I'm in a pinch, right? Unless I think a little lie will take some of the heat off, you know? Maybe you ain't like that. I am. I got to go clean it up later. But hey, man, when I get squeezed, man, I'll flip like a cheese omelet, you know, and tell you what you need to hear. But I guess that's all I got. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Karen's still an alcoholic all day, every day. the effect produced by alcohol, oh my gosh. So I can remember, again, when I was trying to control my drinking and I was not enjoying it, I would drink a little bit. And you know, you get that it says this sensation is elusive, and it is, you know, you get that certain feeling that you're trying to capture, and you can't describe it. You know what it is. You know what feeling you're trying to capture, and you drink until you get that feeling. My problem is I go past it. So like I'll be drinking, I'll start to feel like that warm sensation over me. And it feels like I'm in a nice warm blanket straight out the dryer. And I'm just like, I can ride this. Shots. And then, you know, we're gone, we're off. And that feeling that I'm trying to get, it's there and gone. And then every time I drink after that, that's the feeling I'm chasing. I'm trying to chase that feeling and I can't seem to just get it. It's like, I just can't quite get there. And then it seems like I just went right past it. And I'm just like, I can't ever get that feeling of ease and comfort that I'm trying so hard to get and find with and without a drink, you know, with a drink. And then without a drink, it's me running around trying to control my whole life, having all these problems, and not being able to find the solution that I am looking for. The way that looked like in early sobriety for me was I came from Italy to Portsmouth, Virginia to go to SARP, and I decided it was going to, and I was 3 months dry at this point, and I thought it'd be a great idea. We're going to work out for 2 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're going to get on a meal plan. We're going to hit these macros and micros, and we're going to get on 8 different supplements and 20 different protein powders and creatine. And this is all going to, like, you know, we're going to make sure to go to the sauna and, you know, get the toxins out and everything. And we're going to go outside for at least 20 minutes a day, and all this stuff that I'm controlling around me is going to give me that feeling of ease and comfort that I am so desperately looking for, because I can't stand to be in my own skin. And this is going to change the chemical reaction in my brain, and I'm going to be able to drink again. And here I am 3 years later. So it didn't work. And a lot of times when I hear people who are like, oh, you know, I can't sit alone. I always have to be doing something. I'm like, oh yeah, I did that too. It's called distracting yourself from dealing with your inside stuff. And they're like, nuh-uh. And I'm like, yeah, that's distraction. Distraction at its finest. I did it until my lovely sobriety sister called me out. And I'm so competitive. She called me out on it in a car ride. And I just looked at her, and I, in my head, I'm like, this bleepity bleep bleep, I'll show her. I'm going to do the steps. And then I started actually trying to work the solution. But restless, irritable, discontent, oh my God, I was either suicidally depressed or enragingly angry. And that was my emotional spectrum. That's all I had. And then I had, you know, what they, you know, the psychic change. And I can remember telling my sponsor one day, I said, and we were standing outside at night. It was at Downtown Young and Sober outside. I was looking at my sponsor and I said, I think I'm depressed. And she went, why would you say that? And I went, I don't even think it's depression. Like, I'm not sad. I'm not super like happy, but I'm not sad. I'm not angry. I feel like I'm coasting. I just coasted, like at an even chill pace. And she went, oh, that sounds like serenity. I'm like, that's what that is? I'm like, what is that? Cause I'm so used to chaos. And when I had serenity for this first time, I didn't even know what it was. I thought I was depressed. I was like, I just feel like I'm coasting, just chilling. And today when I get those moments, now I'm like, okay, we locking on to this. Before, it was such a foreign concept to me. And then, you know, the experience of a psychic change, you know, either, you know, you get into that pattern where you succumb to the same thing over and over and over again. And I used to say, I always say, I was in a cycle of suck. I was just in this cycle, and I just felt like there was no getting out of it. I felt like it was my fate, my destiny, the universe's will, that I would just suffer for my whole life until I die. And I truly, truly believe that. I truly believe that there was something inherently wrong with me, that I could not experience true happiness. And I 100% believe that. And it even says we can't differentiate the true from the false, because I'm so in my head and in my sickness, I can't figure out what's real and what's not. You know, even on my resentments list, when you go into resentments, it talks about problems that are fancied and real. Like, I need someone to help me split those hairs, because sometimes I'm so deep in my own self, I can't tell the difference. And, but I finally had that psychic change that occurred, and I was willing to follow some simple directions. And, you know, as it's been said, it's simple, it's not easy. It's simple to admit I'm an alcoholic. That was not easy for me to admit I was an alcoholic. I fought that till the very bitter end. You know, it's easy to say, you know, give your will and your life over to a higher power of your understanding, but that's not something easy for me, a control freak, to do. So these steps, like, yes, a few simple rules, few simple suggestions, few simple steps, but they are not easy for someone like me. But I was willing enough, and I was beat down enough to take the suggestions given to me and to put the plug in the jug and follow some simple directions. And that was not me. That was my higher power doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And I don't know why I had the psychic change. I don't know why some people do, some people don't. My brother, same situation, went through SARP, came out the other side and called my mom and said, yeah, they sent me to AA. It's a cult. It's a religious cult. And I hate it. And I'm never going back. And he hasn't yet. You know, he has not, as of today, gone back. So, but for me, I don't know what it was. My sponsor gave me the choice. We were sitting in this magical spiritual portal called Starbucks, and across the street from Candlelight. And she, on the last day of meeting with her for step one, she said, all right, if you think you're an alcoholic, cool, we can sit down, we can continue with the steps, and I will take you through the steps. If you don't think you're an alcoholic, no harm done. You got my number, we can still be friends. It's cool, you can call me anytime, but you can walk out that door and go to the bar down the street and get a drink. And that was the first time I was ever honest with myself, because I had been fighting the whole alcoholic thing up until that point. And I finally just had a moment. And I feel like this moment, it took forever, but it was like a moment in time where I was like, all right, if I walk out this door, I might not make it back. Like, the rooms will be here. AA will always be here, but I may not make it back. And I was like, I think I need to stay to save my life. And I was like, no, I think I'm an alcoholic. I think I need to stay. And we went through the simple actions of alcoholics. And I think that's all I have on that one. Thank you for letting me share.
All right. I'm going to fold the last two readings together. We're going to do page XXX and then page 152. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum, like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. Dave, y'all have a couple of minutes each to wrap it on up.
That last part right there, right? I remember that specifically. The best years of your life lie ahead. You know, I'm sitting there like, as if, right? As if, dude, I've had an awesome life. You know, once again, fancy the real, or, you know, real life, fake life, whatever. But I tell you, man, that a buddy of mine, I was talking to Dave yesterday, and it's not really plagiarizing, right? But this guy said it, man, and I've taken it from him. He still says it, so I guess I didn't take it all the way from him, man. But this is how he talks about coming into AA, right? For me, this is the long and the short of it, right? I came into a place I didn't want to be in, right? They read me a book I didn't want them to read to me. I wrote down things on a piece of paper I didn't want to write down. I talked to people I didn't want to talk to, and my life got better, plain and simple. You know, what do I got to lose, man? You hear that too. And if you're struggling today, man, we love you. We've been there. We know you. Don't sit on it. Sitting on your problems is what got us here in the first place. I love all y'all, and I got no reason not to. And I always like to say this too. If you don't like me, that's on you, baby. I'm not worried about it, not one bit. I still love you. Thank y'all for having me.
Thanks, Karen Alcoholic. The one symptom in common, they cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. The only relief we have to suggest is complete and entire absence. So when I came in the rooms, I could not imagine my life without alcohol. That was, you know, I'm a sailor in the Navy. Our theme song says drink to the foam. Like, how am I supposed to? I can't be a sailor and not drink, you know, and that was a huge thing for me. Was I, you know, you can't expect me to be a service member and not drink. That's just silly. That's stupid. How am I supposed to make friends? How am I supposed to find, what am I supposed to do with my time? Like, how am I supposed to, you know, do anything? I couldn't do anything without alcohol. And then I realized that I wasn't living life with alcohol. You know, when I got sober, my sponsor said, what do you like to do? I was like, I like to drink. And she went, okay, what else? I'm like, what do you mean, what else? Like, I couldn't think of anything. I didn't even know what I liked because all I did was drink. And I thought not drinking was going to take away my life and take away my sociability, turn me into a Quaker or something. And then I realized I wasn't living with alcohol at all. I literally was living the same night over and over and over again with the same consequences over and over and over again for years at that point. And then when I got sober, I started doing things. Like, I've traveled, I've gone out hiking, I've gone out to do go-karts, I've gone out rock climbing and camping, all kinds of stuff that I've never done before. I'm about to go canyon descending and, like, you know, stuff that I've never done. And when I was sober, I literally got to a point where I was like, you know what, if someone invites me somewhere, I'm just going to say yes and go and see if I like it, because I don't know, because I've never done it sober before. I don't even know if I like it. You know, now, like, I can go places and be present and be around people and not have to take a drink today. And now I'm able to live life and live my life to the fullest. And, you know, it says there's a substitute and it is vastly more than that. It's the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've done more, you know, with this fellowship. When I first got sober, I thought I had to become a shut-in. And my sponsor was like, I don't know about you, but I didn't become sober to become a shut-in. Like, we are not a glum lot at all. We are people that wouldn't normally mix. And I have people from all walks of life and backgrounds all in the same room, because we all have that one common problem that when we start drinking, we can't stop. And when we stop, we can't stay stopped. And we lean on each other and we have a fellowship today. And I can say, even though I'm in Spain and I've left my my foundation, my home in Virginia, the fellowship has followed me here. And I have never once truly been alone in my sobriety. I've always had someone to call. I've always had a person by my side. I've always had sisters and brothers ready to come and pick me up when I'm down. And even when I was struggling out here, there were brothers and sisters here who were ready to, like, show up at a moment's notice and make sure I was okay, and who have their phones on and who are able to help me. And I can't think of any other place where I could have had that type of love and fellowship. So if you're in the room today and, you know, and you think we're a glum lot, just wait. Get some friends, find your people, go do some things, get a sponsor, read the book, and go out and live life, because there's so much to do outside of alcohol. We just have to be taught how to live it. And that's all I got. Thank you so much for letting me be here tonight and letting me share.
Hey. All right. Thank you both. That was great. Good way to start this cycle of the steps. We are going to post our seventh tradition information. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? I know that this coming Saturday is the AA Gratitude Breakfast. That's really all I know, though. Would somebody who has more information like to enlarge upon that?
Gratitude Breakfast starts at 9 a.m. at Bayside Presbyterian Church. And you guys know one thing. You know that nobody does breakfast like drunks, right? So it's going to be, we're going to throw down some eggs and whatnot. But we'll have a speaker from each district. Again, Bayside Presbyterian Church, 9 a.m. District 14 Norfolk has setup detail. So that crew is going to meet there at 7 a.m. We're not cooking, we're not serving, we're not cleaning up, but we are setting up. So if you can help with that, that'd be awesome. You can find the flyer and all the information on the event at tidewaterintergroup.org this Saturday.
Thanks, David. Anybody else? Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. If you're shy, we have an email address, info@simpleactions.net. Anything at all that you may need, let us know. Someone will get back to you. In closing, can we all please thank the panel again for sharing? Thank you, Dave. Thanks, Karen. Good to see you. Thanks to all who participated. And Jen has volunteered to read A Vision for You.
Hi, I'm Jen. I'm an alcoholic. A Vision for You, big book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. That's okay.
Sorry.
But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right. We have a nice way of closing. I think everyone's unmuted. I'm sure it'll be ugly, but let's just do it anyway. Our Father,
who art in heaven.
Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory.
Forever.
Great meeting. All right. Thank you.